Welcome back, listeners. I have a treat for you today. With me today is none other than my husband, the one, the only, Mark Lobota.
I'm regretting this already.
Honey.
Thank you.
It's so weird having a man in this conversation.
The man.
I'm not sure what to do.
Have a couple ideas.
I'm so used to my friends and strangers, ladies sitting across from me with this microphone in the middle. Now I'm not sure what to think. So today we are going to talk about parenting twins. There are so many things we could talk about with the title of Got Your Hands Full podcast. And there's so many things that I could ask Mark about and that he could share with you, but I had to pick just one subtopic to make sure this wasn't hours long. So start us off with how you found out I was having twins. We were having twins. Tell us that story, Mark. Oh, you want to tell the people a little bit about yourself?
No. Well, thank you, Lauren, for having me on your show today. I worked at a city, and I was operating a 10-ton piece of machinery when I got that phone call. And Lauren just tells me she went to a doctor's appointment, and it went well, and blindsided me with, "Yeah, we're having twins." And I, while operating this gigantic, heavy, very dangerous machine, I started blacking out and composed myself enough to drive safely off the roadway into a ditch. And that's how I found out we were having twins.
What made you have that reaction?
Oh, I never really thought it could happen to me. I never thought I would be the twin dad. And obviously, I knew we were expecting, and I just didn't expect to be having twins.
And then, is there anything you wanted to share about the pregnancy, or should we just go into the birth?
No, I'll just go right into the birth there, honey.
Okay. So tell me your version or your perspective of the story of the birth of our twins. So I went into labor.
You can edit this, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So to be completely honest, a lot of it is one big blur. I remember sleeping 4 to 5 hours a night, going to work and going straight to the hospital because you were laid up for quite a few weeks. You're on a bed rest at the hospital. And when you went to active labor, I remember Rosie being born and just no time for affection. Just the nurse scooped her up, off she went into another room. I had this little 6-inch window where I can see through the door, and I was watching them prep her and figure things out with her. And at the same time, you're 7 minutes later, giving birth to Lily. And that was the longest 7 minutes of my life, trying to figure out what was going on and really trying to stay out of the way. There was a lot of people in that room. And then it's very heartbreaking and unfortunate to see a child struggle to breathe. And unfortunately, with our twins, that was their issue, was that once they would stop breathing, a nurse would shake them and wake them up. And then that just meant another 24 hours in the hospital. So Lily was able to recover a little faster than Rose. And Rosie was in the hospital for, what, another week?
Yeah, Rose was the reason we stayed longer. But we had never been in the NICU before. I had never seen a NICU. You had, but.
Yeah, I've seen a NICU before, but not with my children in it.
Different.
It's pretty wild.
So we were there in the NICU 10 days.
newborns. Leaving the hospital, I felt like a celebrity. We had the two car seats. We had the little, like a cafeteria roller tray thing. We had the car seats on, and people wanted to take our pictures, and then I pull up in our van, and I remember being so tired. Mm-hmm. And the drive home, I don't remember the drive home. I do remember this time I went the speed limit. On the first baby, I was going 35 miles an hour on the freeway. Cars honking at me. I thought they were going too fast.
It's true.
Yeah, and I didn't really have any time off of work. Mm-hmm. So once the babies were born, I was back to work almost the next day. And I would start work at 7:30, but I was up at 5, and I would feed the babies, both of them, same time, two bottles, one hand. And I would do that and put them back to bed before I go to work every day. But I tell you what, though, I was so tired. I really do. I don't remember a whole lot of it. One big blur.
Mm-hmm. When does it seem less blurry? When they were a year old or 2 years old, or?
Oh goodness.
Is it still blurry? They're 8 now. So
they are?
We have almost 9 years to talk about. So I don't want to spend too much time on the baby phase.
I think I'm coming out of the fog now. They turned, I think probably when they were 4, mm-hmm. when they really started showing the personalities. Mm-hmm. I think that's when the blur kind of. Then we found out it was just one. I was like, oh, we could do this. It's easy.
Right.
You don't remember when they were babies and they're in diapers and I think they just started crawling. Mm-hmm. And our oldest boy, or our son who's older than them, was only older than them by what, 19 months? Mm-hmm. And we were starting to potty train him. And all I remember is him just peeing all over the house on purpose, just to have fun, just to goof with us, because we were so busy with the twins crawling around everywhere in their diapers. Mm-hmm. I remember that. I got a good kick out of that.
Do you remember the time that Lily put Rose's poop in her mouth?
Yes, I do remember that, like it was yesterday.
So tell the story.
It was so disgusting. Well, they were crawling around on the ground, and we didn't have diapers on them, and we didn't realize that one of the kids pooped on the ground, and the other kid picked it up and put it right in her mouth. I nearly threw up. Oh, so gross.
But we did have brown carpet, clarification, yes. And it was raised. It was kind of shaggy.
Yes.
So you really couldn't see the turd. Now then, the next day, they took off their diapers in the crib together. And one was eating the other's poop.
Yeah, that was gross too.
Do you remember how they would crawl into each other's crib?
Oh yeah. They would have two cribs next to each other. Mm-hmm. They would hop the fence.
Every day.
They would always wake up next to each other.
And now they still are in the same room and often in the same bed.
Mm-hmm. They often wake up in the middle of the night and bam, right back in the bed.
And they're pretty talented at climbing and gymnastics, and very, they're pretty strong.
Very strong core.
So they do a lot of tricks, carrying each other, lifting each other.
Mm-hmm. Got to get up to that high cabinet. One's lifting one of them up there.
Mm-hmm. What else comes to mind in terms of funny memories? Or first day of school?
First day of preschool. Yeah. I walked both of them into class, and they both wanted to hold a finger, and the backpacks were almost the size of them. That was super cute, walking them into the classroom, and of course they didn't want to go once they saw their teacher. I talked them into it. I think I bribed them with ice cream or something. You know how dads can do that. And they went, and they loved it. Now, if we didn't specify, these are identical twins. And as babies, they looked mirror images of each other. Lauren could tell them apart. I couldn't, and nor could my dad. My parents watched them one time, and my dad took a Sharpie and wrote L on Lily's leg. And I was like, guy's a genius.
Yeah, we had to go to the pediatrician that day. He said, what is this, Sharpie? So it is funny because we picked their names before we knew really which baby was on which side, but it just so happened that I guess we didn't know that ultrasound text label twins are and all. Mm-hmm. We didn't think of that.
I mean, really, to be quite honest, that was pretty insignificant of them being on each side. It was coincidence that Lily was on the left and Rose was on the right. But we just decided that we were going to name the first one that came out was Rose.
Okay, that's right. And then it was also funny that we found out when we realized what hand that was dominant for each of them. So I don't know, preschool age, mm-hmm. kindergarten, that Lily was left-handed.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And Rose is right-handed. Mm-hmm. So it's just so interesting. So they shared a placenta. And yeah, we always say you share a placenta, you can share anything. They fight like no other. Mm-hmm. Their fighting is not compared to any fighting between any other of the kids. And mm-hmm. their bond is also not comparable.
Yeah, well, that's correct. Absolutely.
So what encouragement do you have to dads of twins or dads who are fearful of twins or dads that maybe want twins?
Well, here's the deal. When it comes down to children having singles, doubles, triples, whatever, you'll never be prepared enough. You'll never have enough money. You'll never have the right car. You'll never have the right house. You'll never have enough help. Never this, never that. You got to put all that aside. You got to trust in your wife. You got to trust in the Lord and just move forward. You can't let these things hold you down. You can't let them stop you. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. If you're going to have twins or triplets or what have you, there's nothing you can do that's going to stop it. You don't have any control. Just run with it.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice. Please tell our audience your story about Got Your Hands Full, because it's hilarious and I can't do it justice.
So I had a double stroller. I wanted to go for a run. I went to this park. It's a beautiful little park, but I wanted to pick up the pace. So I had two kids. I had two kids in the stroller. One kid sitting on the bars, the handlebar area, and me pushing and running. Well, people I would pass would, you have your hands full. In my mind, I'm like, this is not helpful. And eventually I just got so frustrated and I passed an older couple and she says, you've got your hands full. And I snapped and I said, you too. And she just looked at her husband. And I think they started arguing, but I kept running. And ever since then, that's kind of been a trigger of mine.
But didn't she end up needing your help after the walk?
Yeah, she did. She did. We got into the parking lot. Her car wouldn't start. And so I jumped her car for her. And she just didn't really put two and two together about what she said to me. And
you said, I have jumper cables and I can help you. Mm-hmm. And you started her car. And then you said, see, my hands aren't that full.
Oh, yeah, I did
you
say that.
You had a comeback.
Yeah. Yeah, whoops.
So the fact that you ended up helping that woman after she said that to you is just classic. I just love that story.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, they're more stating a fact than anything. And it's nothing personal because I don't know most of these people. Now, if I had a relative who would say that to me, I mean, yeah, they probably won't be invited to Thanksgiving. Or might not send them a Christmas card. But no, I get it. And that was something I really did struggle with. And people would tell that to me. I used to get very upset. Mm-hmm. I've really learned to not engage in it anymore. Mm-hmm. Nah. Well, I still like your line. I remember the grocery store. I think we were in Acme. And it's rare that we go to the store together and someone said that to you. Like, mm-hmm. Your hands are full. And then you came back with, yeah, you should see my heart. Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah. That's smooth.
Yeah, I stole that from, I think, an Etsy picture my sister bought us. But it's true.
Okay, everybody, here's the deal. The studio just got bombarded with two children and a bulldog. The snorting is not me, it's the dog.
If you hear something, it sounds like a pig. We don't have a pet pig. We have an English bulldog.
Yep, that's him.
But anyways, this is the name of the podcast. I think it's appropriate you tell that story, Mark. Thank you for sharing.
Well, I'll tell you what. I only have a few minutes to go here. I'm preparing for my date tonight, Lauren.
Hey, a date.
Frank, the date is with your sisters. We have a tradition here. We call them daddy-daughter dates.
Yep. Tell us about your first ever daddy-daughter date.
The first ever daddy-daughter date was with our daughter, Nina. And when Nina was growing up, we had a hard time connecting. And the reason for that is because I work and I was going through the police academy at the same time. So Monday through Friday, I didn't come home until 10 p.m., 10:30 p.m. By that time, she was already in bed. I was leaving for work at 5:30 in the morning.
So she was a baby.
She was a baby. Toddler. Yeah. But when she was three, the local Chick-fil-A was hosting a daddy-daughter date night. And they had placemats that had questions on it that I would ask her, she would ask me. We'd color together and obviously had dinner. But the tables were set up to as if we were on a little date. And that was the start of our connection. These daddy-daughter dates, they still continue. I like doing them once a month. We have rules, though. We never talk about to the other siblings what we did on our daddy-daughter dates, because that's what kids do. They compare, they contrast. You know, what did dad do that was different than our last date? And it doesn't mean that daddy loves one more than the other just because we did this or we did that, or we never talk to siblings about it. That's our rule. So we go on a date. They ask if we had a good time. Obviously, we always do. But that's it. We do not talk about it. The daddy-daughter dates can be super simple. The connection of pushing your daughter on a swing, building that trust, going on little walks. It's not very extravagant, but they're learning how to hold your hand. They're learning that how to allow you to guide them. The dates, the actual restaurant dates, that's when they start to learn, okay, this is how I should be treated. This is what a man should be like. You want them to learn that from you. You do not want them to learn that the hard way. I don't regret not putting that stuff on video. And it's just, it's an experience that only we can share together. When we have our own little inside jokes now. These daddy-daughter dates, I mean, these are super important. It will be 10 times more difficult not to connect with your daughter if you do not do these daddy-daughter dates.
I think it's a great experience for any child to have one-on-one time with a parent, and it also changes the dynamic. They're not fighting for the attention of the other kids. If you're in a big family, it's great. We're almost never one-on-one. So it's really hard. They feel like they're always vying for our attention. And those dates, like Mark said, can be walks, can be parks, can be, you know, a few dollars at an ice cream store. It doesn't have to be going out to a fancy restaurant, but it gives them that one-on-one time. But I think no matter how many kids you have in your family, it's good for them to feel like they have your undivided attention, especially with phones, like Mark said, and all the other stuff we're busy with these days. So they love it. They totally love it. I see it. So I appreciate that you do that, honey. So tonight, he's going to take the twins out. And where are you going to go tonight?
Well, tonight, we're going to do something a little different. I'm going to take my girls to go get some sushi.
Oh, yes. The twins are known for their palates. Oh, what would you say?
They're not afraid to eat. Mm-hmm. They're not afraid to try new things. Well, we've had grocery store sushi, which is great. But when you go to a sushi restaurant, like cutting up right in front of you, totally different, totally different experience. They will order their own food. You know, I refuse to order them food. So they get more comfortable speaking out loud, you know, talking to people.
Well, hearing about daddy-daughter dates is invaluable. So I'm sure you gave a lot of moms and dads out there some ideas of something new to try or to encourage them to keep doing it if they're already doing it?
I think in your next book, I think I'll write a chapter called The Art of the Daddy-Daughter Date.
That's good. I guess I'll see you later.
I'll see you in 5 minutes.
Thanks, Mark.
Love you, babe.
I love you too.